The lights are on red. We're away.
MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, March 28th, 2008, and this is episode number 120. We are on a banner roll this year. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to talk to you about motorcycle road racing and all kinds of good stuff. Kind of an interesting show today. We've got a Qatar or Jerez preview. We already had Qatar going on, so we got a Jerez preview. It's just me today. Jules is on vacation, so no Jules. But we got some good stuff. We got some reader email. We've got a little bit of input. We've got a blast from the past from 2005 and a variety of other things going on. So before we jump into all of that stuff, why don't we first start off with an email that I got from Steve Jones. And if longtime listeners are going to know that Steve Jones does the MotoGP suites at Laguna Seca, and he's doing one at Miller Motorsports Park, and unfortunately not doing one at Indy. However, he does have a really cool deal going on right now. He's got an eBay auction, which is completely to benefit the Road Racing World Action Fund, which, if you're not familiar with the Road Racing World Action Fund, it's all about putting air fences in at the tracks all around America so that we can have a good, safe track and keep those walls kind of away from the riders by putting the air fencing in front of them. So Steve has got a promo poster from the Indy MotoGP and a Nikki Hayden handshake flag, and it's up there on eBay, and I'm going to put a link, of course, into that on the MotoGPOD website. It's 100% of the proceeds go to the fund, and it's really, really cool stuff. He's got, like I said, let's see, we got a promo poster for the 2008 Red Bull Indianapolis MotoGP. Never before been hung. It's only been stored rolled up. Perfect condition, 26.5 inches by 15 inches. Perfect collectible or gift for the Nikki Hayden fan or just any regular old MotoGP fan. Also, a 13 by 18 double-sided Nikki Hayden handshake flag. And this is a really cool little deal. So you got to check out this auction. It is running from now through April 3rd, so you've got about another week or so, and the bidding is quite low right now. So take a look at this. Like I said, I'm going to put it up on the website, but if you just go ahead and search for Indianapolis 2008 MotoGP poster, you will find this auction. That's on eBay, and that's from Steve Jones, so good luck on the auction, Steve, and thank you very much for doing for such a worthwhile charity as the Road Racing World Action Fund. That's a really, really cool thing, and so we're happy to see that. Then, let's see, moving on. Got a lot of email this last week, as I do every week. Got a little bit behind this last week. This whole month has been very, very busy for me, but I got a little behind, and I caught up on all of it again. I've heard this one before. Bob's behind on his email, but I think I managed to reply to all of them, and thank you very much for everybody that sent that in to me. One of the ones that stuck out in my head is from Alexei, and unfortunately I don't have Alexei's last name, but Alexei sent in some commentary about the Stoner Mystique that we were talking about last week. Jules and I were talking about the Stoner Mystique. Why is Casey Stoner doing so well? And he says, I was just listening to your March 21st episode where you discussed the question of the Stoner Ducati domination, and he says, I think you guys got it completely backwards. What you said that was Stoner is an adaptive rider and that Rossi is stuck with late braking maneuvers that might be hindering his chances of taking advantage of traction control. I think it's actually the other way around. You'll probably agree with me when I say that motorcycles are very difficult to model scientifically, which one needs to do in the process of designing and tuning traction control. One thing that throws a huge monkey wrench into it is the rider, because unlike in a car, particularly a single-seater car like a Formula One car, the rider has great freedom of movement and therefore it can make a large contribution to the handling characteristics of the total package. This can be a double-edged sword. Rossi has shown himself to be quite adaptive, and all these various successes and things on the various different motorcycles that Rossi has ridden have required different styles of riding. He's also shown this adaptability on track, where things don't go as planned. He's still just able to ride around any problems. which can also be a nightmare for engineers because they make a change, but they're never able to know for sure if the change that they made went in the right direction because the writer is sort of able to solve those deficiencies of it with his or her body. If the writer is aware enough of doing it, that information can be communicated back to the engineers, but it's still not as good as having the writer that does exactly one thing one time, time and again, and then the lab coats can compare those outcomes. In my view, this is what is happening with Stoner. I think Stoner's current strength is that in his predictability and willingness to rely not just on the machine, but on the engineers to correct those handling issues while continuing to provide them with usable feedback. Now, I like Rossi, but I think that he's got a major obstacle at the moment. He either needs to stop writing around the problem, which we don't actually know how bad they are since we've only seen Qatar so far, or he needs to improve his communication with the team. It's possible that they, as well as the other teams, are still adjusting to the new importance of software engineers, and that channel of communication is still emerging. Either way, it's going to look like it's going to be a fun season. So, Alexei, I thought those were excellent points, and you are right. Rossi is a very, very capable writer that can adapt himself to deficiencies of the motorcycle. Now, whether or not that's somewhat of the case of what's going on with the YZR M1 versus Ducati's Desmond Sedici, I'm not 100% sure. I think that, you know, Stoner has shown a remarkable amount of talent. It's obvious that this talent is specific to Stoner because other riders just don't seem to be able to ride their way around it. If that's what you're, you know, if this is true of what your point is that you're making, and whereas Stoner, because of his predictability, possibly can. And I think that's a very, very good point. And we're going to talk a little bit about Marco Melandri here in a little bit. But in any case, it's a great email. Thank you very much, Alexei. I do appreciate it. It was really, really good stuff and food for thought by far and away. Next email that we got is, this is from Chris Spindler, longtime listener of MotoGPOD. And he sent me an email a couple of weeks ago, and unfortunately I haven't been able to act on it, but he wanted to mention that VivaDucati.com. So we're going to put a link up to that, VivaDucati.com. They have a VIP package for Indy. So we've been looking for a Steve Jones type event that has the East Coast folks, and this might be it. So unfortunately, like I said, Steve Jones is not doing his suite at Indy, but apparently there's going to be one from VivaDucati.com. So you need to check out Viva Ducati, and they would be doing their cool suite there at Indy, and that is definitely something that's worth looking into. Next thing that I'd like to mention, I have been lucky enough to be invited out to St. Louis in August with the Midwest Cafe Racers Association and Anthony Dean and Dan Jassa out there. And they were kind enough, like I said, to invite me to do a track day with them. So in August, I'm all set up. I'm going to go out to the Gateway Motorsports Park there in St. Louis and do a track day with the Midwest Cafe Racing Association. Which Midwest Cafe Racing Association, if you're not familiar with it, these guys are based in St. Louis, Missouri. They feature a diverse schedule of street rides, track days, and racings. They're a friendly grassroots organization that exists primarily to provide motorcyclists with fun ways to enjoy their toys in a social setting. So you want to check out the MCRA track days that has been traditionally been held at the Gateway International Raceway. However, this year, they're also doing Hallett Racing Circuit in Hallett, Oklahoma, added to the schedule for 2008. These folks do not fool around when it comes to tech inspection. You've got to read their rules carefully and make sure that your machine complies before you leave home. They also run races, and so they're dead serious when it comes to the safety of each machine that participates in one of their events. The really interesting feature of their MCR track days is that they do devote an hour each day to actual racing. So this is unusual, folks, and racing at a track day. While you can opt to just watch, the MCRA also offers a race license clinic that can put you right there on the grid. If you've ever wanted to stick a toe in the water as a racer, this is an excellent way to get started. All things considered, an MCRA track day is a unique experience. So I encourage you to check these guys out. Their website is mcraracing.com, and again, we will put up a link on that. So mcraracing.com, and check it out. Anthony Dean and Dan Jassa are, like I said, they're officers in the whole club sort of thing they got going on, and Really, really nice of him to invite me out there, and I'm really, really looking forward to that. Unfortunately, it has to wait till as long away as August, but that's just how the scheduling things worked, and that's what we're going to be doing. So after that, let's see what else we got here in the news. One of the interesting news items that came up here on MotoGP is that some of the racers of MotoGP basically petitioned to have the Qatar opening race for 2009 moved up. And what they actually wanted was that this race be moved up so that it's not necessarily the opener. However, the Qatar race organization, the Qatar Motor and Motorcycling Federation, has a contract with Dorna that says that Qatar will host the opening race up till 2016. And so these guys want to open the race. And the problem is that, as we saw last week, in a night race, or a couple of weeks ago, in a night race in Qatar in the middle of March, the track is too cold. And basically, these riders weren't able to perform at their maximum performance sort of a thing because the ground was just simply too cold. The tires could never warm up. So Casey Stoner, Valentino Rossi, and Loris Caparossi all formally requested that the event be moved to a date when temperatures would be warmer. They asked to move the date to a little bit later because at night when the temperature drops, it's a bit too cold for the tires, Caparossi told the official MotoGP website. But what's happening here is that Qatar does not want to give up that opening round. Dorna is really open to understand the request. Qatar, however, wants the first race of the season. And so what might happen in 2009? We might move that opener up to early April. Right around now, March, April timeframe, you're looking at a big temperature changes going on down there in the Mideast, like that sort of a thing. So if they go to early April, it's going to take a week, possibly a week before or after the Bahrain Formula One Grand Prix. And it's a good option for them from their point of view, from a business and marketing point of view, because motorsport fans can take in both events on a 10 to 12 day golf trip. And I can think of nothing better than 10 to 12 days down there in Qatar. So it tends to get hotter at the end of February, but this year was not the case. And they managed to sort of have things going on. But next year they're hoping that they will be able to get a track that's just enough warmer that it will help out and the riders and make for basically a better overall racing experience. I actually thought the Qatar nice race turned out very, very well. The track was cold, and that did affect the racing. However, it's hard to say exactly how much, you know, moving it ahead for like 3 weeks is going to make a big, big difference or not. I think it would make quite a difference because, like I said, the temperature changes this time of year there down there in Qatar is quite substantial, and they possibly might be able to get quite a bit of extra temperature going on out of that track. So I think that's going to close it up for our opening remarks. Why don't we move on to a little Jerez preview that we got, and we'll talk about our upcoming race weekend in Jerez. All right, let's talk about Jerez 2008. First of all, before we get into anything else, let's jump in the Wayback Machine, woo, and go back to Jerez 2005. This is quite a while ago, but it was definitely a race to remember because on that last turn of the last lap, that tight, almost 180-degree left-hander that leads onto the start and finish straight, Sete Gibernau, if you remember him, Sete Gibernau, took a delayed apex, and he thought he was going to be shutting the door on Rossi. But he kind of left it open just enough of a crack that Rossi managed to shove in his Yamaha right up the inside. And they touched, which was actually kind of more like a collision. And that forced Sete Gibernau off the track onto the gravel. Sete managed to keep the bike upright, and he got back onto the track to finish second place. Still well ahead of Marco Melandri in third. But he was very, very lucky not to have gone down. But he was extremely upset about the whole thing, called it a dirty pass, all sorts of stuff. And this was kind of justifiably so to an extent because it was a very, very aggressive, no-holds-barred pass. And the Spanish crowd there at Jerez was not happy. They were extremely upset about the whole thing. I remember hearing the boos from the crowd, which were boos for Rossi, and that's really not something you hear every day. You know, but when you're racing in Spain, you do not shove the hometown boy off the track on the last corner and the last lap unless you don't mind hearing a few boos. So you know, Rossi probably had to be a little bit careful in the parking lot on that one on the way out as well, I bet. So let's talk a little about Jerez this year. Let's see. First of all, from the Yamaha team press release, after the excitement and intrigue of the first ever night race in Qatar 2 weeks ago, business returns to normal this weekend for the Fiat Yamaha team as the second round of the MotoGP World Championship welcomes the staff and riders to more familiar surroundings in Spain. Rossi's love affair with Jerez stretches back to 1996 when he took the first of his six victories in all classes at Jerez. Five of those have come in the Premier class, including with Yamaha in 2005 and in 2007. But he has not had a win since Estoril last year, so he's got to win if he's going to avoid his longest winless streak since his debut MotoGP victory at Donington Park in 2000. However, one guy that you're really, really going to have to watch out for here at Jerez is hometown favorite Jorge Lorenzo, and it's going to be his home debut in the Premier class. And he's going to be heading into that race full of confidence after taking center stage under the floodlights of Doha in Qatar. 20-year-old started from pole position, and he finished on the podium in his maiden MotoGP appearance, meaning that he lies second in the championship while we're heading into Jerez. So it can probably provide it actually cannot provide a more stark contrast to LaSalle in Qatar, with the rolling green Andalusian hills providing the ideal setting for a natural amphitheater that has become known as the Spanish Mecca of motorcycle racing, with upwards of 120,000 crazy Spanish fans making the annual pilgrimage. Track itself challenges the riders to pick the most effective racing line with very few hard braking points and little opportunity to fully open the throttle, because as you'll remember, Jerez is quite a tight and twisty track. It's almost been compared to a go-kart track, and it is kind of in a natural amphitheater, sort of a bowl setting. Almost, it's been a long-time dream of mine to go to a GP at Jerez, and one of these days I'm going to do that, just if nothing else to witness those crazy Spanish fans. But you got regular and quick changes in directions, and this means that the rider requires a responsive overall setup with good grip and maximum lean angles. So this is promising to be a very, very good race. Personally, my favorite there is going to be Jorge Lorenzo, but I will tell you about that in here in just a second. Nikki Hayden has this to say. Jerez offers a great challenge for riders and engineers, interesting variety of corners, yada yada doodle. Hayden says, Qatar was not a great weekend for us, but we're working hard to move on from that Jerez. Our bike should work good at Jerez, and in the past, the Michelin tires have worked very, really, really good here. I think it's a cool track, but it's not a top speed track. I like tracks where you've got to put sections together, and Jerez all flows together pretty good. From a riding point of view, you definitely need edge grip for the long corners, and you need a bike that steers good in those long corners. It's a good track and one of my favorites, but it's the atmosphere that really makes it. If you haven't been there, you need to go. So, like I said, Hayden's advice, I do want to go to Jerez, and one of these days I hopefully will, and we'll check it out with Nikki Hayden there in Jerez. Let's see what else we got going on. So one of the things that I mentioned earlier on was that I sort of favor Jorge Lorenzo to win this race. And the reason I think that it's going to be his home track, and he's really got something out there to prove. Casey Stoner has had mixed results at Jerez. He did a fantastic job. He won the BMW there in the testing just this past year. But he finished, fifth last year, which was, I think, his worst result all season long. So we're going to have to see how Stoner does at Jerez. The Ducati's horsepower advantage, not that it is already kind of been winnowed down compared to the other motorcycles, but it's not going to be nearly as much of a factor here at this track because it's so tight and twisty. And another couple of pair of riders to look out for is James Toseland and Colin Edwards on the Tech 3 Yamaha satellite team, because again, that top speed advantage is not going to be playing into Rossi or Lorenzo's hands on that. We'll have to sort of see if the maneuverability of the M1 can account for that, and that we're going to see possibly Toseland and Edwards do very, very well. Edwards has done well at this track before. I think Toseland should have no problem. So these guys are going to be the guys to watch. The Yamahas, in my opinion, are definitely right up there as far as favorites are concerned for what's going on at this track. while we're talking about Ducatis and things like that and Stoner's domination, something that's been popping up in the news lately is Marco Melandri having been basically told that if he doesn't start producing results, he's going to be cut from the team. And I got this one from Jules, who is, like I said, he's on vacation, so he's not here this week. But he told me that Livio Supo, the CEO of the Dorna Racing, has, in effect, told Melandri that you need to produce or you're going to be cut. On Tuesday, March 25th, there was a semi-official sort of Ducati story where Livio Supo says this is not necessarily true. We're expecting an improved performance from Marco this week in Jerez because we think he's learned a lot in the first race. There's no doubting that this weekend, which is only three races since the penultimate round of 2007, where he produced an outstanding display to finish second right behind Casey Stoner. So now with his improved handling and improved feeling that he got with the Mitsubishi during the race in Qatar, I'm sure that Marco's results will start to come for him as well. So we're going to have to see how that one works out for Marco Melandri. So there's our Jerez preview, short as it is. It was quite short, but it's going to be a very, very good race. It's on Speed TV this weekend. You might want to make sure you check it out, and I'm sure that all of you that view the races on Eurosport, you'll be getting it live. So go ahead and look for that right there in your local time zone in the early afternoon. And if you want to watch it live on Speed TV, it should be on around – or not live, excuse me, but the first time that they actually play it on Speed TV, it will be on Sunday. All right, that's going to do it for today. An extremely short show today, much different than our past shows. I could offer all kinds of excuses about that, but basically let's put it down to that I've been extremely busy with work getting ready for our big, big trade show that happens here in April. And Jules was on vacation this week, so he could not join us. But in any event, hopefully the show wasn't too short for you and that you enjoyed what we had to say a little bit. And you'll tune in next week. We're going to have a Jerez review. So we're going to talk about the results of Jerez. We're going to see a very, very exciting race, I do believe. Like I said earlier on, my picks were Lorenzo to win it. And I think if we had to take a guess, I'd say Stoner to come in finish second. And we'll just sort of go with that and see how that one works out, if I'm right or if I'm wrong. In any event, between now and next week, make sure you catch those races there on Speed TV or Eurosport or whatever it is, the chosen MotoGP channel that you get your races on. That'll be on Sunday. And keep the shiny setup. Riding weather is starting to become upon us, so you want to make sure that you're really, really careful on your motorcycle until you come back in after the long winter break and make sure the roads are good and that your bike is good and all that sort of thing. So keep it very, very careful, and we will talk to you later.